Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm recording Money and Markets a day early. I'm flying to California tomorrow. I'm hoping to see some of you. We have a great group of about 40 subscribers coming to the lunch in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl. There's a country club there. It's a lovely spot. And we'll be having lunch this Saturday, May 6th. And then I'll be speaking in Valencia at a wealth conference. You can learn more about it. That's on Thursday, May 11th. And then I'll be flying from California to Louisville. And we have our great crowdfund celebration. We have finished the funding of phase two. We're very excited. And the organ is ordered and is coming, hopefully in June. And Dr. Joseph Farrell and I and Chuck McCorkle, my other sponsor, will be together in Louisville with a group of about 35 wonderful people to celebrate on Saturday. And Joseph's going to make a presentation. It's going to be very, very juicy. I'm leaving May 20th for Sydney, and I'll be there through early June, mid-June. And then June 19th, I go to Hong Kong for a week. Be talking and seeing some of the subscribers there. It looks very interesting. And then the following week, I'll be in Dhaka in Bangladesh. It's my first trip to Bangladesh. I'm looking forward to it. And then I come back, and I'll be in the San Francisco Bay Area for a week or two, and we're trying to organize a lunch for July 8th in Marin County, and I'll keep you posted on that. Good news, we are going to do a second week in Australia in May 2018. We have a waiting list that almost will fill up our 20 spots for the second week, and I should be mailing you sometime between now and early next week. So if you haven't signed up for the waiting list and you want to be notified in the first round, let customer service know. If we don't fill it up from the waiting list, then we'll send something out to the on the update to the general group. So let customer service know if you're interested in that second week in May 2018. It's a week in the 5 days in the Australian Outback with Richard Dolan, Jason Bowden-Smith, and myself. We still have prayer books. They went like hotcakes like last year. They're going slower, so we're going to have them available all year, I think. So prayers for 2017, email, call, or send self-addressed stamped envelope to our P.O. box, and we'll send them out to you. They're free. Our theme tonight is the world has become a global armaments expo. I hate to say it. It really looks like the military budgets need an excuse for a raise, and the weapon sales, the armaments makers need more foreign sales. And part of the, not all, but part of the chest pounding we're watching is something that's good for everybody's business. Again, the world is highly dependent on the war economy. Over $1 trillion a year in military and armaments, GNP. Putin announced that everything that had gone on was good for weapon sales. Russia has dropped down to number three as of the 2015 annual data. U.S. number one and France number two. It looks like the weapon sales appeal to Trump's let's make a deal quality. And as I said, the weapon makers are targeting increased foreign sales. They've been telling their analysts and Wall Street that for a while. Anytime you see a big appropriation increase proposed in a budget for an agency, you get these events that help market it. I was talking the other day to somebody about how the Waco incident really came out of the ATF trying to drum up essentially photo opportunities for their budget increases. One of the more notable things was the American Missile Defense System, which has been deployed in South Korea to supposedly protect it from North Korea. It's all part of the divide and conquer, and the Koreas got installed, and the Chinese are objecting and cutting off their tourism visit to South Korea. If you look at all the sort of economic games going back between China and the Koreas and us, it's quite extraordinary. Essentially, what's important to understand, and I got to stress it again, whether you look at the natural resource businesses or multinational corporations or falling GNP growth, you're just seeing margins shrink worldwide. And, of course, war is something that increases margins. And when all else fails, that's how you create an inelastic demand where there was none. Money and markets, the Feds took a pass on raising interest rates. That proves that there is softness. They described it as temporary softness. They said they expect two more bumps. That leaves the Fed funds rate at a 0.75% to 1% target. They are continuing to reinvest their balance. I see that as more important than what they're doing with the Fed funds rate, because the Fed funds rate is really going to follow the market. Keeping the money rolling over on their balance sheet is more important, and I truly suspect that there's a great deal of fraudulent securities in that portfolio. So I'm very suspicious of, you know, whether or not they were doing things like buying paper from Wells Fargo. Anyway, they described the slowing in the first quarter as transitory. I'm still not quite clear on why they see that, because if you look at the all sorts of symptoms going on, there's real fear about what's happening in the economy, and I think that's part of the push for the tax reform in bill and the way that it's coming forward. So let's take a look at the markets. The U.S. dollar is still a bit soft for the year. It's down 3% using UUP, the dollar ETF, U.S. dollar bullish ETF. The bond aggregate is up 1.5%. The 20-year long treasury ETF really recovered. It was significantly down. Now it's up 3%, and the intermediate up 1.93%. My old friend Junk keeps baffling me. That's up 3.57%. Everybody who's invested in Junk has been steadily right throughout this bull market, and it just keeps shaking my head. The U.S. equity market's still in their strong bull trend. The S&P now up 10.89% for the year. Home builders up more, 13.44%. And the if you look at aerospace, the home builders are even outpacing aerospace. So you can tell inflation is really taking hold. Real estate ETF down up 2.69%, lagging. Commercial not doing as well right now as residential. If we look at Europe is very strong. Germany up almost 13%. Switzerland up 14%. You can tell there's a lot of happiness among the establishment about where the French elections are. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then you have the developed markets away from North America up 11%, and the emerging markets come back strong at 15%. They had come back down as of last week, but they're really coming back strong. China small caps is up 11%, and the large caps up 10%. And India flying, you can tell the establishment's happy about the war on cash. A lot of pain there, but the India ETF up 20.44%. Gold and silver have backed up a bit. Silver now up 3% for the year, so that's come down a bit. And gold up a little bit, close to 7.5%. So as we can see, the equity markets continue to be very, very strong. And, you know, there's an old saying that a bull market climbs a wall of worry. And I've never seen equity markets that have climbed this kind of wall of worry. It's quite extraordinary. But they continue, the trend continues to be a bull one. As I said, the French elections, the establishment is breathing a sigh of relief. We had the debates last night, and Macron is 59% to 41% Le Pen, so almost 20 points in the lead. And that's very significant because the voting is on Sunday, so we're just 3 days away from the vote. The State Department has put out alert on Europe through September, and it's amazing how many people I know in the United States consider Europe a very dangerous place to travel. You know, I can't imagine where they're getting this, and I'm very suspicious. But with the State Department putting out an alert on the safety travel advisory on Europe, I put a link up on the website so you can link to it. If you've ever traveled a lot in Europe, it's so much safer than traveling in the United States. I travel in both places a lot, and I think the State Department should put out an alert on Chicago. I talked a lot in the annual wrap-up about controlled demolitions and reengineering and how, in many aspects, we can't continue to kick the can in the economy. And sure enough, everywhere you turn in the news, it's just the story of controlled demolitions and reengineering. If you haven't read that part of the wrap-up, it's a good grounding for watching all the news. We're going to be seeing this roll out for years. Puerto Rico, the largest local government bankruptcy filing, it's obviously it's not a state, but it is a commonwealth. They have approximately $70 billion of debt. It's a very ugly story. Texas passed legislation to overhaul the Houston pension funds. And again, we're seeing state and local governments now struggle and face the music on the pension funds. And that story has just begun. It's going to continually roll out. And again, we're going to be dealing with this for years, particularly because in the healthcare side, the federal and state government are struggling with healthcare. And to a certain extent, that's a much bigger non-funded hole than many of the retirement systems. And then, of course, in reengineering, the Congress and the Trump administration kicked the can with a spending bill that moves the debt limit out until the end of this budget period. The new budget, of course, in the federal fiscal year will start on October 1st. It was a $1 trillion spending bill, and there's a lot of frustration on both sides of the aisle. Many of Trump's supporters very unhappy with the compromises that had to be made. To a certain extent, the first real Trump administration budget is the 2018 budget. That's what he created a blueprint for in March, and his full budget proposal is coming out in May. To a certain extent, I really do believe we're watching a global armaments expo and air show as part of the hullabaloo to really increase the military budget, because his proposal is, you know, not to re-engineer the military and to give them a big raise, and not to mention the $6.5 trillion that went missing in their last financial statements, which was fiscal 2015. So it's really a complete, to me, abrogation of the philosophy that he was elected on. And if you look at our first quarter report card that we did for the Trump administration, he got a D+ on the budget. And if that doesn't change, you're going to see an F. In fact, I put up a commentary this week called that pesky Constitution, with links to a lot of the information on the missing money. And it was inspired by Trump's comments about the Constitution, which shows his frustration. But the reality is, what needs to happen is we need to bring transparency to the money and bring the money into compliance with the law. So if we can move illegal immigrants into compliance with the law, maybe we should move Congress and the executive branch into compliance with the law. It's interesting to look. If you look at, I've been reading announcements from Duterte from the Philippines, who's doing very radical stuff and throwing out all sorts of multinational interests and dealing unbelievably aggressively and very forcefully with the narcotics trafficking. He can do what he's doing because he has more than 80% approval. Putin in Russia has more than 80% approval. Trump is completely stalemated because he's got about 40% approval. And frankly, that means Congress will not support him, because they think supporting him means they won't get elected next time. So the challenge for all of Washington is, how do you get the general population and the deep state to both agree to a solution? And that's and the deep state spends a lot of money trying to build divide and conquer throughout the country. And as I've always told you, I live in a very segregated community. And when I first got here, I used to say to the two sides of black and white, you know, if you just collaborate about the money, you could hate each other rich instead of hating each other poor. Anyway, but the divide and conquer has really worked here in a way that it hasn't worked in Russia and the Philippines. It's quite remarkable how intelligent the general population is there about what they need to do to support the pro-decentralization team. Ryan and the White House both think they can get a health bill done shortly, so the House will vote tomorrow, Thursday. This health bill has really bounced around in the sausage factory of democracy. And it's going to be very hard reconciling the results with the international standards and tax reform. You have a whole bunch of industries that are not willing to be reasonable, and the general population in many respects not willing to be reasonable. And so my concern with both the healthcare bill and what they do with tax reform, the danger is you're gonna be able to get through what's good for the wealthy and not what's good for the general population. That's particularly true if you cancel the estate tax and get a corporate tax change. And so, this could come out of the sausage factory looking pretty bad. In the middle of all of this, Apple, it was pointed out in the press that Apple is now has $256 billion of cash. It was purported by some of the British press to be more than the governments of US and Canada. I would say not really. That's just looking at the general fund. It's not looking at all the different reserve funds and what's around. But nevertheless, Tim Cook announced today very cleverly that $1 billion was going to be set aside for a venture fund on to be invested in companies focused on advanced technology manufacturing. Very politically smart. Also, could be, if they do it properly, could be a very great investment. Very smart thing for Apple to do. I would bet on, even though it's $1 billion, it's only 0.39% of their free cash. But that, as I said, that is an area of great investment. And if you look at how the buyback stocks have been performing, the clear message from the market is the market will not thank you for buybacks. They want dividends or you to find good things to invest your cash in. But it is a real comment on centralization that $250 billion of cash is sitting around and can't find anything to do. George Friedman, the founder and now left Stratfor, he has created his own new firm, had a long piece this week for subscribers on Afghanistan, basically saying there's no point in putting people into Afghanistan. We have destroyed the nation, but clearly we can't build nations. And it's a very important point to be made about the whole neocon strategy. You run around the world destroying things, but when you're through destroying them, it could take centuries to build it back, and you certainly can't do it. If you have any wonder about how this all works, watch Charlie Ferguson's wonderful documentary on the Iraq occupation called No End in Sight. It's remarkably and very well done. But it reminds me of the quote I put up in one of the recent commentaries on this topic from General Colin Powell: "You break it, you own it." And so there's talk now about putting more boots on the ground in Afghanistan. And Friedman just said, "Look, it's a money pit. It won't work." What's interesting is you now have all sorts of private interests, including in the poppy fields, that for obvious reasons don't want to give up. It was interesting. I was listening to Alex Jones this week, and he was describing special forces coming back from Africa, complaining that they were only being used to simply loot in Africa. And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at, unfortunately, wholesale looting. Anyway, there is danger because there is real pressure to put boots on the ground in Syria and Afghanistan and other places in the Middle East. It looks so far as though Trump is resisting. The question I keep having, and we talked about the Saker, so I won't get into it tonight, is what is the goal? I continue to think there's intelligence about what's going on that we are missing. If you look at the number of different nations who have troops in Syria, it's mind-boggling, and it's particularly mind-boggling that the war continues despite all of this. So, there's a real story here, and I continue to believe we're missing a part of what we need to know to understand it. The war games that are occurring inside and around the Trump administration are very significant. If you look at what's happening, the establishment is significantly taking out all of the media capacity that was instrumental to getting Trump elected. So we now see O'Reilly out of Fox and then Bill Shine out of Fox. That means Ailes, O'Reilly, and Bill Shine. So here's a group of people who built Fox into the top TV or the cable news and with three or four of the top five shows and literally being fired for it. It's a very interesting comment on how the economics of news is not news, it's the other interests of the owners. Anyway, then we see Jim DeMint out of the Heritage Foundation, and according to all the news reports, his number one sin was helping the Trump administration. Of course, we have Flynn out at National Security. That happened a while ago, but we now have Bannon in the corner and increasingly Conway in the corner. Lee Stranahan is out of Breitbart, and I'm getting reports from the independent media that what had happened to a lot of independent media is they had built a business around ad revenues from Google and flow from Google and Facebook. And as a result, they've been cut off, And now, you know, there's all sorts of effort by Google and Facebook and the social media to discourage flow coming to them, and certainly no revenues. And so it's been very devastating for their business model. It's one of the reasons that from the beginning I avoided Google and Facebook. At one point, one subscriber finally talked to me many years ago on trying Facebook. We got up to about 1,300 friends and then got hacked, and I said, that's it, I'm off of Facebook. So I don't like taking ads. I like getting paid by the people who I want to create value for. So it's much more direct and simple. But needless to say, independent media has been really hurt tremendously. So if you look across the board of all the different players who really helped the Trump effort, it looks to me like they're all being moved aside. And it's amazing how quietly it's being done. It's not getting a lot of attention and a lot of interest. And I'm amazed that the president is not interceding and letting it happen. It's a real mistake. If you can't protect your lieutenants, then ultimately they come and get you. I think part of the switch at Fox is that the strategy is to get in much younger people and be able to pitch the millennials and use the millennials to basically, in the budget game, pull the rug out from under the boomers. Because the way to solve some of the budget issues is to just basically, you know, if you've stolen all the money, just say, oh, well, it's, you know, the boomers were wasteful, they don't deserve it, blah, 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 blah. And you basically use your resources to pitch and win the millennials. And it looks to me like that's all part of pulling the rug out from under the sort of more nationalistic group and pull the rug out from under Trump. The question is, when are they going to go in for the kill? Is it going to be on the congressional election? Is it going to be 4 years from now? Or is it going to be when the spending deal's up or before the spending deal's up and they try and go for impeachment? There's a whole lot of players who'd love to get a switch into Pence. There's no doubt about it. So we're just going to have to see and play it by ear. There was one of the, I think it was CNN or MSNBC, somebody had a big editorial today on why Trump has proved he's incompetent. It's time for him to go. So that drumbeat may be starting now that they've got all their players out of Fox and they've got Jim DeMint out of Heritage. I don't think that they're going to get very far, certainly until and unless the military gets what they want on the, you know, across the board. I think the military is going to be loath to see Trump go, but we'll have to see. It's very, very fluid situation. So I had a great talk with one ally today who was telling me that they didn't like Trump because he was so mean. And basically my opinion is that when Bush and Obama give the banks $27 trillion and $11.5 trillion be stolen, that's mean. So I don't care that Obama's polite and gracious and has a nice style, because to me, mean is when you steal my money. So, you know, I'll take Trump's attitude any day over somebody who steals $27 trillion from the American taxpayers. Our hero this week is Clifford Carnicom. I continue to get lots of questions on global spraying, and ultimately, what I do is I point everybody to his great, you know, the big two-hour interview we did with him in 2010. It's a classic. It's still, to me, the best one single source of what is global spraying and why is it happening. And he lays out all the different hypotheses. But I continually call on him and what should I think about this and what do I do about this and what's the answer for this. And just a wonderful source. If you haven't checked out the Carnicom Institute, it's a wonderful resource. And Clifford is an amazing example of what one person could do to make a difference. The other thing I wanted to point out, I put up in last week's Money and Market an interview with Dutch banker Roger Bernhard and somebody I don't know. It's a very useful description of the top of the leadership of the financial system. I'm trying to check out his credentials and references, so I can't speak to how credible he is, other than his descriptions certainly align and fit with everything I've experienced. So whether it's information or disinformation, it's useful. So, but I think it's worth checking out. And let's go to the movies. I wanted to recommend to you some presentations that our wonderful guest, Sarah Wiesner, recommended on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. So if you're a beginner, this is really beginner's information. If you're a beginner and want a good introduction and overview, she pointed me to some great websites and great links. So that's there if you want it. Our interview was a fascinating experience for me. I wanted to give an overview of the Bitcoin market. What is Bitcoin? What's happening? Why is it works? We don't get into so much about why Catherine gets very frustrated about Bitcoin and is concerned it's a Mr. Global prototype, which you've probably heard me say many times. Sarah Wiesner is very, you know, she works every day full time on Bitcoin. She's at the on the team at the Bitcoin Embassy in Tel Aviv. I've been communicating with her for about 2 years. And this is really, to a certain extent, Bitcoin is really a bit of a young person's game. And she has been, in the last 2 years, the most intelligent, the most informant. She has sent me answers to literally scores and scores of questions and written long, detailed information. This is a woman who operates on 24 tracks and deals with enormous complexity and has real intellectual integrity. So whenever I ask her the pros and cons of Bitcoin, she gives me plenty of cons and describes plenty of trouble. She's in the trenches dealing with it every day and has been for years, and is exceptionally knowledgeable. And so she has never done an interview before. I think this is her first. And but I said, Sarah, you're so good at this. And she's somebody I trust to, if you want to reach out to her, I'm sure she will respond. She's very good by email and very good at answering questions. So this is a very intelligent young woman who's really in the trenches on Bitcoin and understands it very well and can point us to some good references. And she gives a very good overview. This is a basic introduction. So if you're a Bitcoin expert, you know all of this. But if you don't, we really talk through the basics of Bitcoin. And I think it is important to understand what Bitcoin is, what cryptocurrencies are, because I do think this is a market that's going to grow. The pros of cryptocurrencies and digital currencies is they are very low-cost transactions. And that's what the whole global market wants. We need a way to transact with each other. And a lot of those transactions are going to happen online. And Bitcoin is certainly, and cryptocurrencies are certainly one way to do it. And so I think in that sense, they're here to stay. As you know, though, the cons are this is a young market. It's driven by speculators. The infrastructure is very young. Lots of things go wrong. So it's very important for you to know the best practices of if you're going to do Bitcoin, how do you make sure you do it and really don't get burnt by the sort of immaturity of the market. So Bitcoin 101 with Sarah Wiesner is something I really enjoyed doing. Ask Catherine. Got a lot of questions. Thank you again for some great links. I couldn't believe the one we've posted. You send great links, so I've been posting most of them, but one of them was about the nurses who are refusing mandatory vaccinations. Now, that's just the kind of action that's going to change the world. Hi, Catherine. I recently listened to your Where Would Jesus Bank audio seminar, and I decided to look into my bank's finances. Mine is a regional bank that I've had an account at for many years. I've always been satisfied with the service they provide. They gave me an annual report from 2016 that showed that the bank was well capitalized and didn't borrow from other banks. The main business of the bank was mortgages and personal loans. The report didn't have details on the bank's securities positions or on standards for loan origination. When I asked for a more detailed report, the manager didn't know what to give me. I went around to some other banks and collected financial statements. Many of them were more detailed than the one I got from my bank, but none had details on the security positions that the bank held or on standards for mortgage and loan origination. Is this information that I as a customer should have access to? If so, what specifically should I ask for so that people at the bank know what I'm after? Also, when they list cash and securities as an asset category, does that necessarily mean that the cash portion is physically kept in the bank, or could it be in an account at a tapeworm bank collecting interest? Thank you for sharing your good work. On the investment portfolio, sometimes a bank will have information in the footnotes, but here's a legitimate thing for you to ask on a due diligence. One is to know what is the investment policies. So the board should have approved a investment policy statement. They should have written guidelines on what their investment policies are, and it's perfectly reasonable to share that with depositors, although that would be a bank policy. But now their investment policy will be somewhat driven by the regulatory requirements on them. So the policy you're reading is not necessarily dictated by their decision as to best practices, but will also reflect the bank regulator's desires and requirements, because some of those requirements are set by law. What you want to know about an investment policy is what are the credit ratings. If you look at disclosure on a bond fund, you'll see usually a profile of how much paper is AAA, how much is AA, how much is single A. So you want to know what the rating quality is. I suspect most of their paper is federal government or government agency related securities. So Freddie, Fannie's, Treasury, bills, and bonds. The other thing you want to know is what is the duration? By that I mean, what is the average maturity of the entire portfolio? If it's long, you have interest rate risk. If it's short, you have very little interest rate risk, although much shorter, much lower yields. And then finally, you'd like to know the annual total return. So you want to see to what extent they're dragging down their margins by subsidizing the government. One of the things that happens to many banks is the government literally puts them in a situation with the regulatory requirements that they have to end up investing a lot in government securities, and they're getting very little yield on it, but it does give them liquidity. The second thing on loan and mortgage origination, that at this point is so tightly regulated, it's not something I worry about. What you want to look at is two things. How long do they keep mortgages on their balance sheet? Sometimes they securitize them all off, or basically wrap them with a Freddie and Fannie and put them back on their balance sheet, at which point it's a totally different thing. But if they have a lot of mortgages that are uninsured or unwrapped, what you want to know is where are they? So you want to understand their geographical risk to a particular economy. But the other thing is you want to know what their historical default rate is. So I think you can work just with default rates. I wouldn't worry too much about standards. I would want to know geographic distribution. Then also, when they list cash and securities as an asset, does that necessarily mean that the cash portion is physically kept in the bank, or could it be an account at a tapeworm bank collecting interest? Yes, it could be, very much could be elsewhere collecting interest, although in the current market, not much. Securities and cash, it's relatively interesting to know exactly where it all is. So, and that you have a good custodian chain. Good morning, Catherine. Thank you for your amazing work. I live in Montreal, Canada. However, my business manages events for American companies, so I get paid in U.S. dollars, but the majority of my expenses are in Canadian. In your opinion, is it better hold as much U.S. dollars as possible or exchange it for Canadian ASAP, and why? Right now, I would tend to bring the money back in Canadian because the dollar has been relatively strong. I was worried about a much higher rally in the dollar, but it looks like it's probably not going to happen. Certainly the risks are lower. If Le Pen was going to win on Sunday, then you might want to consider keeping more in the dollar for now. But I would bring things back in the CD. I'm not a great believer in arbitraging currencies. I like to hold money in whatever the currency your expenses are. But the U.S. dollar has run up quite a lot against the Canadian dollar in recent years because commodities are low, and so it's relatively strong. Anyway, without the chance of that sort of bear trap rally in the dollar, I would think bringing it home, particularly if you have a mortgage and getting that mortgage paid off, could be very attractive. So I would tend to bring it home and, if anything, pay off my mortgage. You continue. Personally, my house is 50% paid off. 80% of my money is in mining stocks, 15% in physical silver bars, 3% gold, and 2% Canadian cash. In your opinion, what can I do to improve my portfolio? I don't know, because I don't know you well enough. And also, I can't give investment advice, which relates to securities on the Solari report. I'm subject to very serious regulation on these issues. But I do believe it's best practices not to give anybody advice unless you have a full picture of their situation. And I see terrible mistakes made by people who basically say things that are generic and then somebody misapplies them to their particular situation. There are a couple things I can say about your financial position. One is yield matters, dividend matters. And right now you're basically in assets that produce very little, if any, yield or dividends. And I would rethink, if I were in your shoes, I would want to have more diversification. And I would also absolutely want to be diversified into things that were part of Global 3.0 and also were generating a dividend. Also, again, I would pay off the mortgage. I wouldn't want to have a lot of money sitting around in cash right now. If I had a mortgage, and I know it does depend partially on what the yield is, or what the percentage is you're paying on the mortgage. But I think in an environment with this much uncertainty and where we could really face volatility, anything you can do to bring down your overhead is extremely intelligent to do. And I would much rather have no debt than have a whole lot of silver and gold bars hanging around. I'd just love to get rid of that debt. And I think that I'm very concerned about inflation hitting expenses significantly. And that's why anything you can do to invest to bring down your monthly overhead, I think, is good. What are Catherine's thoughts about the bombing of the Syrian airstrip and the approval of the Supreme Court justice within hours of each other? Coincidence? Not necessarily. There could be a connection. If I had to guess, I would say probably not. But there could be, you know, because these kinds of deals fly back and forth, and things that look totally unconnected can be, when it comes to swapping deals, quite connected. Simon Parks had a very interesting theory about Trump and Tillerson falling for the fact that thinking that it really was the Syrians who did it, and then realizing they'd been tricked by a false flag, which explains their reversals in pretty quickly. And one of the things he points out is if there had been a chemical attack, it's very important as a policeman of the world to show you're not going to tolerate that. But anyway, Parks's theory was interesting, and I thought it certainly was one of the few theories I've heard that explains the fact pattern around that week, because we did see Tillerson do a pretty big switch hit in the president, too. My big question, my concern about Gorsuch is that he has a terrible record on helping Gonzalez on the torture question. And so my concern about him is he just an order taker who's going to use what is clearly a great deal of legal talent to just simply do what the bosses want. It's a little frightening. Catherine, I was enjoying your recent conversation with the Saker when a number was quoted that caught my attention with, "That can't be right." You stated that the Moab bomb recently dropped on Afghanistan clocked in at about $314 million each. For a dumb conventional bond, though huge, to have a stratospheric price, even for our bottomless pocket boys in the Pentagon, this seemed way out of line. So I checked with an organization I use as fact-checked on military items. The link is below. I really enjoy these interviews. Oh, that is a great catch. Thank you. It turns out the total order of all the bombs ordered was 314, and it's $16 million. For one bomb. So the bomb that was dropped was, in fact, had a price tag of $16 million, not $314. I was wrong. So I'm always mortified when this kind of stuff happens. But once upon a time, I lived in a resource-rich world with lots of people checking all my material. And I aspire to have those kind of resources again someday. But in the meantime, I have all of you, and I really appreciate your letting me know. It's a common expression at the Solari Report. This is how we learn. So we love to have a high learning metabolism, and I really appreciate your sending that. Hi, Catherine. I wanted to ask a question regarding China purchasing American assets such as land and companies. If China's making these purchases, how can America be great again? I will say America, but will be owned. It will say America, but it will be owned by China. Is this what we mean to colonize a country? We have always, for hundreds of years, had significant cross-border flows and investment, and a lot of that has been very healthy and good for America. If you look at the current amount of what China owns, it's tiny. Now, the challenge is that China is so huge in terms of population, India too, that if flows continue, there's no doubt they could overwhelm certain markets. So if I would strongly recommend you see the Australian documentary Red Obsession on the Chinese cornering the red Bordeaux wine market, and it shows you what happens when a society that large swarms in on a relatively thin market. I assure you the U.S. real estate market is not relatively thin, although markets like the L.A. or Vancouver market can get very much impacted by Chinese money flowing in. We saw that same concern on Japan in the 1980s, and of course, it all turned out to be to America's benefit. So I'm not particularly worried that China's going to buy up America. When they do start to buy up things, you see very strong political pushback. But there is no doubt one of the concerns of the leadership is how is a country of 325 million going to maintain its global position vis-a-vis a society of 1.3 billion in China and an almost equivalent amount in India. So, you know, Asia's rising, there's no doubt about it, and there's an awful lot of people. Catherine, I have a friend who gave me a copy of a book entitled High Priest of Treason by Melvin Stamper, J.D. He's a constitutional lawyer and uncovered many things about our Constitution. The opening paragraph in the introduction states the following: "This story is true. If it were fiction, my mind could not conceive such insidious methods of deceit or intricate webs of fraud. The conspirators I will introduce you to are diabolically brilliant, cunning, absolutely ruthless, and dangerous. They will cut a baby's throat for a dollar." Have you ever known or read this book? If not, I would try and find a copy. Let's see. I feel you'd find it quite interesting, to say the least. I now have one, but I have not read it. And remember, I have over 200 books sitting in my den that I have promised myself or somebody else I would read, so I have a lot of catching up to do. They continue, "Your recent interview on rents was awesome. I bike ride a lot and have listened to it 3 times. Thank you for all you're doing and trying to accomplish. Your insight and intellect are incredible. So glad I found you." Well, that's very nice of you to say. I must say, I think this environment is exceptionally humbling, and it's exceptionally humbling to have spent as much time as I have trying to figure out what in the world is going on and still not be able to draw an organizational chart of the governance structure of your world. So frustrating. But keep letting me know what I can do to be useful, because I absolutely aspire to to put out content that has you listening to it 3 times, because it's so useful. You want to soak it all in. Catherine, Oklahoma has had some very good U.S. senators. One of them is Tom Coburn. He came out strongly in support of the Convention of States action. After leaving the Senate, he gave several interviews that were subsequently published. In one of them, he stated he did not believe that the situation in Washington, D.C. was going to be corrected from within. That is like asking the fox to leave the hen house. Since you have spoken against the Convention of States action, I would appreciate your sharing your reasons, objections for this position. From what I've read and heard, I've chosen to support Senator Coburn's position, but would like to understand yours. As an aside, I'm not sure that President Trump realizes just how deep the swamp is that he's setting out to drain. I sent the link. I agree it's not going to be resolved from within, so it's got to come from without. I agree with that. But the thing that's got to come from without is not a change in the Constitution, because they don't obey the Constitution anyway. The thing that's got to come from without is enforcement of the Constitution. The question is how to do that without putting the Constitution up for complete destruction. So I sent you the link to Edwin Fierro's interview that we did on the Solari Report. It was a special. It's public. It's called American Suicide, and it's Fierro explaining if you have a convention of states, there is absolutely nothing to stop it from being hijacked and the Constitution literally torn up and written from scratch. And so, you know, gun control, property, you know, property rights. I just think the whole thing's on the table, so you need to be really careful. But I agree with Senator Coburn. It's got to come from outside. And so we're going to be working on our preliminary title for the second quarter wrap-up theme is how to enforce the law when the government is breaking it. So we're going to be talking a little bit about what are some ideas that will really bring enforcement. And if it would help, after you listen to the Vieri interview, if it would help, certainly share it with him. If not, I'm happy to discuss this with you or with him, because this is a very, very important issue. How do we change things? The battle that you fought, and Yuri Dubinko reported in his book Bushwhacked, has done nothing to improve my opinion of the federal government and those that live off the taxpayers' blood. The online summary of Dubinko's book showed me that the problems go well beyond Washington, D.C., but the boundaries that the action is meant to put in place will help, in my opinion, balance budget and term limits being two of these. Problem is, that's not what you're going to get. You're going to get a constitutional process hijacked. Now, let me just say a few words about balanced budget, because the problem with a budget is not going to be solved by announcing that we have to have a balanced budget. What we've done is we have disappeared $11.5 trillion. We have disappeared the assets and ownership of the technology that's been financed through the black budget. And we've disappeared the assets acquired in all these foreign wars paid for by the taxpayer. What we have not disappeared is the debt that financed all of that. So we have $20 trillion of debt on the budget. And if you pass a balanced budget amendment that says, okay, now we have to balance the budget, what is on the budget is the ability to tax the taxpayers and expropriate their property to carry and pay for the debt. But you're not putting the $11.5 trillion on the budget. And that's why you say you don't need a balanced budget amendment. You need to figure out how to enforce the current Constitution, because that $11.5 trillion or the other assets were disappeared illegally under the Constitution, and you need to have the Constitution in place, not tear it up, so you can enforce it and get that money back. So, and I don't disagree with you about term limits. The problem is you're going to make the permanent staff and the deep state even more powerful. So this is a complicated but very important issue. So I would just warn you, balanced budget sounds great, but remember the problem with the budget is it's operating outside the law. The problem is not that it's not balanced, it's operating outside the law. And the question is, how do you get it back inside the law? And remember, if you get it back inside the law, or you try and balance it when the private assets that have all have been stolen are on private balance sheets, but our property and our taxpaying ability is on the budget along with the debt, then we're just going to get completely rolled. So it is it sounds great, but when you look at the math doesn't work. It's literally committing suicide for the honest people. So please listen to American Suicide and send more questions back. And again, we'll be discussing this in the second quarter. But I think a balanced budget amendment would make things much worse. And I absolutely believe that if you get a constitutional convention, it will get hijacked and it will go to places you don't even want to imagine. The better that Americans understand the federal government warts and all, the madder they will become. The question is whether they will be mad enough and will they find candidates that have integrity. Ignorance comes with a very steep price tag. Yes. Many, many more thoughts on that, and I'll defer to the second quarter wrap-up, and I hope you find that useful. But anyway, listen to the Vieri interview and send more questions. Hello. I have heard Catherine talk about investing in different areas of the market, specifically in companies that focus on space. Does Catherine offer specifics about these stocks in the Solaris subscriber membership, or is this an added service? If it is an added service, what are the specific details of the investing services? What is the recommended dollar amount for the portfolio advice of this service? Thank you. I do consultation services through Solari Investment Advisory Services. If you want to learn more, just check the website out at solariadvisors.com. I do not manage money. I do a screen for a money manager called the Solari World Hedge Portfolio. And I screen and approve the stocks. One of the reasons we've been working on the list of space stocks that we developed for the 2015 annual wrap-up that was published in January 2016 is I very much intend to do as much as I can to include stocks that are focused on space. However, just because I put them on the approved list doesn't mean that the money manager buys and sells, and is certainly not obligated to. The Solari World Hedge portfolio will be announced publicly probably sometime this fall. It's operating, but we have not put it on the website yet. We want to operate for some period of time before we do. Anyway, if you're interested, I would check out solariadvisors.com. And when we do publish the new website, which I expect to have up by July, I know I keep saying it's going to be up, it's coming. We will have an updated version of all those space companies. So I think it's very useful to take a look at what's happening globally with the private companies doing space. So we're going to continue to make some effort in that area. Catherine, I ran across the site and thought I'd bring it to your attention. They claim to be using Oregon energy to counter the chemtrails in the western U.S. They appear sincere, and if they're really doing what they claim to do, this would be a huge tool to add to our toolbox. And the website is thechembao.com. They're reporting on things I've seen personally and have read about nowhere else. And the fact that they are not trying to scare people, but trying to educate and empower people is a big plus. I don't know if you have the resources to investigate, but maybe you know people who know people and might be able to get some information, and they might be worth interviewing if there's real substance to their operations. Thanks for your time. Big fan. I know nothing about them. Right now, I don't have the bandwidth to investigate. If anybody does, please be my guest. I will tell you, I believe that Wilhelm Reich was very much onto something with Oregon Energy. So I think the science of Oregon Energy, I believe, is real. Now, how to harness it, I have no idea. Whether Reich was really successful at harnessing, I don't know. And whether this particular group of people is successful harnessing it, I don't know. But I do think it's real, and I do think it's potentially a real solution for many of the things going on. Hi, Catherine. I came across this interview with a Dutch financier. He's referring to the interview of Ronald Bernard, which I also put up on Solari.com. It was in Money and Markets a week or two ago. I don't know if you saw this or not, maybe ever heard of him. I'm so glad I'm a little person. Looking forward to the interview with Saker. Yes, we had that up 2 weeks. It's 2 or 3 weeks ago. I believe it's very interesting. I'm trying to check him out, but everything you said sounded solid to me and fit with my own experience. So there was no bell went off that said this guy is incredible. So it certainly sounded credible to me. But I'm trying to check out his background and get a read on him. So he's still a stranger to me. But I think the information is useful. My only concern is it was let out. There seemed to be incredible numbers of rumbles going on about the problem with the leadership is they're Zionists, and now we have the problem with the leadership is they're Luciferians. And I'm sure Ridley Scott just came out and talked about the fact that aliens were out there and they were dangerous. So, you know, there are different groups. It's Zionists or it's Luciferians or it's aliens. It's interdimensional powers. Who knows? But clearly, the one thing I think we know about the people at the very top of the financial system there, they feel no empathy for the general population. And I think that's one of the things he communicated very well. Catherine, today a Greenville Post article written by David Pear that reflects my experience here in New Mexico. The liberal middle class is emotionally numbed out. They have complete lack of empathy for the millions of people that the U.S. has slaughtered, the nations that the U.S. has bombed to piles of rubbers, and the suffering the U.S. has caused to tens of millions of people. I've concluded that I live in a country that collectively pushed the red button long ago. This is not a story about some nice ladies in a church willing to make a few sacrifices. This is more like Germany paying a collective price. We deserve to pay the price individually and collectively. Saker suggested you read John Michael Greer. Great stuff. Yep, I just added that book to my collection of 200. Among many things, he wrote back in 2012 to, quote, collapse now to avoid the rush, quote. Anyway, I would not underestimate the collective toll of the last 50 years of covert operations and mind control. The people who have tried to do something about all the things you're describing have very much been targeted and targeted in very invisible ways. So I think there's a lot, much more pushback than you think. And I feel a lot more empathy for the general population because I know the power of those covert operations and the power of that mind control. So I would vote, let us never lose our empathy. And I also remember the effort to try and stop the Iraq war. You know, the country was very much against it, just like the country was very much against the bailouts. Hi, Catherine. First, I need to thank you for keeping me grounded. After having been slapped in the face by a whole new reality years ago, it's been a real emotional roller coaster ride. It's easy to get bogged down with all the doom and gloom negativity others are selling. I appreciate the focus on things we can change and that there are others out there that feel the same. I'm still on the roller coaster, but at least I know there are positive people like you, your guests, and your subscribers out there. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Second, what is your feeling on rising interest rates over the next 12 to 18 months? I know the Fed is talking about possibly six more increases over that time. That seems like a very tough sell considering the current economy. It's clearly a tough sell considering the economy. That's why they backed down this week. They want to take them up, but they keep running into difficulty in the softness in the economy. Here's what my expectation is. I think if they're successful, they're going to take rates up another in the next 12 to 18 months, maybe 50 to 100 basis points if we're lucky. But I would not expect to see the long bond rates to be anywhere more than 100 basis higher than where they are now. If you look at demographics, if you look at the need, the inability of governments to carry the debt that they have, or the deflation that's coming from automation, I think that there are very powerful forces keeping interest rates down. Next week, we'll do the interview with Rob Kirby about interest rate swaps, and you'll hear a little bit more about that. So I would be surprised. I think they're sincere that they'd like to bump it another 25 basis points a quarter this year. But I just don't think, given all the sort of tsunami of things keeping interest rates down, I don't expect to see it more than 100 basis points. Sometimes you'll hear some analysis of people saying that interest rates are going to skyrocket. I just don't see any chance of that happening. And certainly the sovereign government debt market could not tolerate it. Another question on the Dutch banker. Hi, last week I asked a twofold question where I asked about the role of Israel. Your link to the Bernard video far exceeded my expectations. I look forward to the interview with Saker. The link you sent shocked me in a way that begs the question, what can we as individuals do? Your red button story is far too polite. I'm at a loss for words. Thank you for your work. You really need to read The Evolution of Cooperation by Robert Axelrod. It really explains why I say that transparency and shunning means that the will of 8,500 people cannot run the planet. So you cannot run a highly centralized system where personal responsibility results from transparency. If I can see very clearly what a person is doing and what they're doing is anti-human in the extreme, they will be shunned in a way that makes it impossible for them to run the planet centrally. So please read Evolution of Cooperation with Robert Axelrod. It's one of the many reasons that I continue to be an optimist. I think we have to go through a rough period, but I am an optimist, so please read it. Artificial human eggs and sperm, the outgrowth of genetic and stem cell research. There will be millions of parentless children, an army of millions of programmed robots. Think about it. This isn't science fiction. Human populations are being farmed. And then they sent the link. Yes, however, this has been likely going on for centuries. That's one of the reasons it's always very instructive to read the Bible from cover to cover. It's amazing how much it will tell you about things like this. New technology is going to be like a bout of food poisoning, and we have to kind of let it run through the system, I'm afraid. And as I said, I believe we'll survive it. However, in the meantime, it's one of the reasons I've come to understand what Dr. Phil says about the importance of nourishing and promoting human civilization, because there's a whole bunch of stuff going on that's terribly nihilistic and terribly anti-human. Catherine, Wayne Madsen has been blasting Trump after endorsing him for POTUS for the past few months. Here's one of the recent fusillades, which frankly seems to have at least some merit. What do you think? Are we left with just the Freedom Caucus between us and open technocratic tyranny? Madsen, just not that long ago, did a very funny U-turn on Trump and pedophilia. It was so bizarre when he did it. I got very concerned, and it looked to me like somebody had a major control file on Madsen. What he was doing wasn't logical. It wasn't rational. It didn't make any sense to me. Now, if you look at his most recent piece, he's talking about the U-turns that occurred in September, and in April, and they have, in fact, been dazzling. Now, if you look at the full neocon agenda, it doesn't look like Trump is fully cooperating with them. We see rumors that McMaster has proposed putting major boots on the ground in Syria, major boots on the ground in Afghanistan, and Trump is clearly resisting those. I also think, you know, he looked one way right after what was supposed to be the chemical attack in Syria, and then really has sort of come out against more aggressive plans. So I think that Trump is struggling under a lot of neocon pressure, and I believe that with Clinton it would have been much, much worse. But there is no doubt that we continue to experience the push for the 7 countries in 5 years. One person wrote a long question. I'm not going to read the whole thing about the history of the 7 country and 5 year plan, saying it came from an Oded Yinyin. I'm going to mispronounce this Oded Yinyin plan of of the World Zionist Foundation. Anyway, I'll put that in the notes, but I do think it's very important to understand what is really going on in Syria, and where did the 7 countries and 5 year plan come from. I believe it's what it will take to get everybody in the central banking warfare model, so it relates to wanting the global currency. But another question I have is, what kind of third party breakaway civilization or other civilization is represented in the Middle East, including underground? And what does that have to do with what is going on? And I don't know the answer. And they talk about their concern that this could cause World War III. Yes, it could. Now, I believe the leadership believes they don't have to have a World War III with Russia. They think that between sanctions and the sort of natural demographic challenges the Russians are going to have, that they can sanction and starve the Russians into submission. Whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. But yes, are there dangers of World War III? Yeah, but I would suggest that since 9/11, you know, World War III has been happening and ongoing. So $6 trillion in the Middle East is not insignificant just because there's not a nuclear weapon. And as you know, I believe that the leadership is practicing weather control and using weaponry to mimic natural events like tsunamis and earthquakes. So I think World War III started on September 11th, 2001, and has been ongoing since then. And many of the weaponry has been invisible, and I think is far more dangerous than just nuclear weapons. Dear Catherine, you mentioned in some previous podcasts that you expect trials on privatization of entire cities. I noticed the same and recently found this link, and there's a link to freeprivatecities.com. What's your opinion on this initiative? Kind regards. So I don't know anything about this. I took a look at the website, but I think it's not surprising to see people starting to discuss this or try and decide it. If you look at the structure they're using, it's one I think is dangerous. If you start off with one corporation running everything, you run the risk of, the question is, will the corporation end up owning the people? So it didn't look like a healthy governance structure to me. I prefer governance structure with a self-perpetuating board that hires and fires corporations to provide services and sets up in voting, voting investment process between the citizens and the assets within the city. So if you look at some of the old governance structures I had for the different Solari vehicles, I had what I think is a far superior governance structure than what they're using. But I think these kind of things are going to be tested as people get more and more frustrated with existing sovereign governments. And here's the reality. Once you let loose a lot of mercenary companies around the world and bust up the Treaty of Westphalia, as soon as governments no longer have a monopoly on force within a regional or graphical jurisdiction, well, then it doesn't take long for people to say, okay, we'll invent our own new jurisdictions and cut all these guys out. So it doesn't surprise me that this is being tried. And I really appreciate your sending me the link. I didn't know of them, and I think it'll be fascinating to watch. Catherine, I've noticed quite a few members are asking you how to find a good bank. I suggest using the Unbiased Weiss Ratings Watchdog website for banks, credit unions, and insurance companies. There is a free 30-day trial at weissratings.com. Click on the sign-up link. Also, Weiss is very good. I used to always recommend them. If you go to our bank local page, we used to have a link to their ratings. I don't think it's there anymore. That's when they were free. I didn't realize they had a free 30-day trial, but I agree. Weiss Ratings is very useful, and I find all the rating services on the banks useful. So thank you for pointing that out. Dear Miss Austin Fitz, I'm a subscriber to your reports. They are fantastic and open my eyes and ears to other worlds. Moreover, your guests are so knowledgeable, and I've learned so much from you and them. I wonder if you have any information on safe and reliable purchase and storage of gold and silver in Hong Kong. I'm going to be in Hong Kong next week, and I would like to contact some of those companies, or maybe you can refer me to other experts in this area. We had a good firm from Sydney on the Solari report, so I would point you to that precious metals market report. I don't have reliable information, and it's one of the reasons I'm going to Hong Kong in the third week of June. So I'll be there essentially in 6 weeks, and I'm going to start searching and due diligence. Whether or not I come up with one, we'll just have to see. But I'd like to know more about custodian options both in Hong Kong and Singapore. I'm a big fan of yours and appreciate your courage, honesty, and knowledge. I also love Western classical music and opera, since I also sing classical Cantonese opera. Oh, that is so wonderful. And I also want to thank you because we emailed on this, and you're putting me on to some good sources of where I can go see great Cantonese opera when I'm in Hong Kong, and I really appreciate that. I love going to opera as I tootle around. Hi, Catherine. Hope you're enjoying your Sunday. I've wanted to forward this link regarding weather risks since you had the live program on unpacking your financial ecosystem, as weather has not been considered and is a risk I thought it would be helpful to share with the group. Yes, weather is a huge and very important risk, and I appreciate that. As for people not taking responsibility, that behavior is all over the place. Upon retirement, I took a temp job at a Head Start school. I am nervous about the reaction after the election. When I saw the condition of the families, my unease intensified. If Jamie Dimon not taking responsibility scares you, wait till you see this group. Yes, not everyone is going to make it. In a slow burn depopulation, the first thing you do is debase the culture, and that's how you can basically depopulate a group of people. So it's one of the reasons we want to make sure that we don't allow ourselves to get debased. Nothing debases a culture faster than the U.S. welfare system. It's extraordinary. Terrifiedness does not begin to describe the feeling. I continue to work on my coming clean, having just secured my local CSA grow for summer vegetables. Fabulous. Started writing on communication, studying to be a ham radio operator. That's fabulous. Also finished the book Common Core, Rotten to the Core. I'm going to see if I can get involved in classical education. Fabulous. I know if Indianapolis, this type of school is booming. Looking forward to next week's show. Oh, it sounds like you're doing great things. Well, you certainly are not debasing, and that's all we can do is do ourselves. Hi, you are no doubt busy, so get straight to the point. You live in a small community, so you know the power effectiveness of sitting around the kitchen table or teaching in a small group. The web is fine for pure info, but really is rather sterile. Besides, if anything happens to the web, we'll all be back to our tables. So with the table set, Would you be interested in working with me to put together a financial education package that would be taught in a small group setting? You could sell it on your website, and people using the package to teach would charge a small fee to make little money for themselves. I'm still exploring your site. Lots of good info. I think that's a great idea. The question is bandwidth. So our tiny little team is 150% committed to for the year as to what we're doing. But if you have the time, I'd be happy to listen to more about what you have in mind and why a new package would be better than the ones that are currently available. One of the things you said I very much like is the idea of making this accessible to people who could use it to generate fees for themselves in helping get people educated about how money works around them in a way that helps, because I think you need coaching. So having Soleri teach some teachers who can generate some income helping their people in their local environment sort of adapt and grow is of great interest, because I think there are a lot of talented people who could generate an attractive income to supplement other sources of income. I was just listening to your latest podcast and heard you mention that you'll be coming to Australia in May and June. I was wondering if you'd be open to meeting with one of our senators who I believe would benefit greatly from your knowledge of the financial operations of the deed state. He has been a member of the Australian Party for many years, our version of the Republican Party, and has always sought to promote the principles of small government, lower taxes. If you would be willing and can spare time for a meeting, please let me know. Yep, I will let you know. I'm happy to come down to Melbourne or meet in Sydney, whichever works for you. I'm going to be on Australia for 3 weeks, so we have plenty of time. I was introduced to gold money by you 9 years ago. I put money into it at that time and now find they have locked me out of my account, which I intended to close. I telephoned yesterday and spoke with Thomas Menard. Though we had a bad connection, I understood they wanted me to answer questions, this in spite of the fact that I gave them my holding number. Anyway, I did so, including having to submit a photo. I still have heard nothing. Is Gold Money still a reputable organization? Franklin Sanders and I withdrew our recommendation of Gold Money several years ago when they changed ownership hands. And so one of the reasons I was so enthusiastic about them was if you look at who their original owner was and the investors, they had extraordinary history and experience about what it would take to be a custodian with great integrity. So they were very unique and special that way. And of course, with that team gone, you know, my reason for wanting to be there was gone. So now, based on what I know of their operation, which is not a lot, but based on what you told me, they're struggling with both the need for great security and lots of U.S. regulation. So my guess is you just need to be persistent, but I would be surprised if you were not able to get your holding transferred as you wish. So I think you just need to be persistent, and otherwise I wouldn't worry. You've often spoken the possibility of money being sent off planet. While my beliefs expand to accepting the possibility of ETs, I can't understand why they would want money, especially money that isn't backed by anything. Is it just to control us? What am I missing here? First of all, you know, the fiat currency from the, from planet Earth could be used to buy things and trade on planet Earth. So in theory, if off-planet civilizations do exist, there is a reason for them to take money. But I'm assuming we're exchanging money into currencies that they can use, which would be gold. It could be technology, and it could be assets, including water, animals, or human slaves. So, you know, I think it may be one of the things that explains people disappearing, whether they're disappearing off planet or disappearing into underground bases. So, you know, just as when I go to Europe and I exchange my dollars into euros or Swiss francs, I think, you know, the same would be true for off-planet trade. And one of the questions is that why gold has so much value on planet Earth? Because it was the currency that would trade off-planet. And that is a theory of many people believe. Hi, Catherine. I want to thank you for making the Salieri Report available and sharing your wisdom and knowledge to so many people. I especially appreciate the variety of topics that you present to your subscriber. They all matter and are vital to the wellness of our society. I'm a new subscriber. I'm looking forward to meeting you at the Pasadena lunch. I recently watched the movie Going in Style with Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, and Alan Arkin. Cute movie. Here's a link from the below to watch a short clip. The Guardian was not so kind with their review. I noticed in the movie that the date of the bank robbery that inspired the Michael Caine character to rob his bank was on May 18, 2016. As displayed on the surveillance video, the three characters trained for 20 weeks or 28 days, 4 weeks for their heist, that took place on June 15. Steve Mnuchin is one of the producers, and I'm just wondering if he is putting a few dates out there for those in the know. It's far-fetched, but I thought I would share my suspicions. I don't know. Sometimes they... they do things like that. So they're absolutely examples of that. Whether this one is, I have no idea. With regards to your review of Bitcoin, do you have an opinion on gold money? It's a cryptocurrency backed by gold, so it's not really a fiat like Bitcoin. I opened a small account recently and sent small gifts of gold to my kids and relatives. Again, same answer as what I told the last question, or one of the last questions. I withdrew my recommendation with Franklin Sanders several years ago when they changed ownership. And if you look at who founded gold money and the lead investors, they were just people who had extraordinary experience and knowledge about what it took to have real integrity as a custodian. I had a lot of faith in them. And once they turned over control, there was no reason for me to have that recommendation stand. So, what can I say? I would just, in anything that doesn't have that kind of integrity with custodian, or you can't be sure it does, I would just be very careful as to how many amounts you have. It's the same that any Bitcoin enthusiast will tell you about not, one, you shouldn't keep it on an exchange, but if you do, you should only keep what you are prepared to lose. So I think the market is still very, very immature for cryptocurrencies, including anything that was backed with gold. Good morning, Catherine. Can you please explain how the Puerto Rico filing for bankruptcy will affect U.S. Treasury bonds? Also, does it make a difference whether it is incorporated or not? There is no reason for the Puerto Rico filing to directly affect U.S. Treasury bonds that I know of. I don't know if it makes a difference whether it's incorporated or not. The PROMESA legislation that allowed them to do a bankruptcy is authorized by Congress, and it puts them in a very sort of unique process. I think what is important is whether they're sovereign or within the bankruptcy under the PROMESA legislation, or the current governor wants to make them into a full-fledged U.S. state. So I think it matters whether they're in their current status or they become a state. I do think that there is an indirect impact on the Treasury credit rating, because a properly managed Treasury would not permit a Commonwealth within the umbrella of the United States and the executive branch as well to be harvested in the way that Puerto Rico was. It was, to me, a lot of things were going on that were fraudulent, and certainly the Treasury would have known. And so I think in a well-governed system, these kinds of things don't happen. And ultimately, that reflects on all of us, including the Treasury. As I said, they're in a special bankruptcy process created by Congress. And I think now that they have gone into bankruptcy, there is terrible danger of very significant prioritization. I just noticed they hired as their executive director of the Financial Oversight Board of Puerto Rico the U.S.-Ukrainian investment banker they had being the CFO of the Ukraine. This is not somebody who knows Puerto Rico and is being paid $625,000. Meantime, the governor of Puerto Rico has hired Rothschild and Company to be their financial advisor. So this is a very ugly picture, and if you know, if anything, we should all hold prayers, hold Puerto Rico in our prayers. But if you want to worry about what piratization looks like, I'm afraid that Puerto Rico is gonna show us how ugly that can be. Hi, Catherine. Thank you for your continuing and wonderful work. Recently, we have heard that the mandatory adult vaccines are to be in place by 2020, which is the same year that the 5G rollout is to be done. Do you think it's a coincidence that these two agendas line up, or is there something larger unfolding? I do not think it is a coincidence, and yes, I think something larger is unfolding. We are not wanting to be worried about these kind of things, but these two are unsettling and set to be in place in only 2.5 years from now. I don't think they're going to make that deadline, but yes, I absolutely believe it's connected. I think 5G is being designed to increase the ability to mind control the population and weaponize the population. You know, I see and hear so many people worrying about FEMA camps or police states. Don't worry about any of those things. Worry about mind control technology being used to manipulate the people around you in very dangerous ways. I'm going to be down with Jason Bowden-Smith in Australia, and I'm hoping to do a Solari report with him on the latest developments with 5G and an update on his research into EMF radiation and how to protect yourself. So stay tuned. Okay. Phew. That's it. The questions for this week, and send them in. More next week. So we have a great lineup. Next week, we have interest rate swaps with Rob Kirby. Rob came on earlier in March to do the Exchange Stabilization Fund, and it really, you understand the power of the Exchange Stabilization Fund when you add the derivative stories, and the most important part of derivatives is interest rate swaps. So I wanted to get Rob back right away to do interest rate swaps. It's something he knows a tremendous amount about, and it's hard to find someone who knows a lot about it and has real experience trading the market professionally and is willing to talk about it and connect it and integrate it with all these other things. And Rob is really, he's just a marvelous person, and he does a great job of introducing interest rate swaps and explaining why it's important. We're also going to be publishing as soon as we have it up, but you know, either sometime this weekend or early next week, the special from Rambus Chartology. Rambus was in the hospital and so couldn't deliver his blockbuster on the normal timing at the same time as Equity Overview. So as soon as we get that up, we'll have that for you. And it's a great overview of equities, currencies, fixed income, and the real long-term trends in the market. So there's an old saying, the trend is your friend. And I just think Rambus does a marvelous job of mapping out the trends. And then May 18th, a wonderful, wonderful discussion with Junius Ricardo Stanton, Edward Bernays, and the 10 Big Lies of the 21st Century. One of the reasons it's so hard for people to understand what's going on is the lies are so monstrous. And Junius does a great job of sort of going through them and keeping us in a state of amusement. So, ladies and gentlemen, until May 11th, interest rate swaps with Rob Kirby. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.